And when I first read these traits, I thought to myself, like, wow, like, I really need to stop judging my actions as either good or bad. I should start filing them as wise or unwise based on how many of these traits I deploy when I was making the decision. Because something can be a smart decision, but not necessarily a wise one. Like, that's what this research made me realize. And it just feels like wise is a far more durable description than good.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of a food metaphor. Like, it's like wisdom is the cast iron skillet of soft skills. Come on now. Come on now. Durable. Withstanding gets better with age.
You know what? I'm not gonna reject it. I'm not gonna reject it. But see, now you got me thinking about cast iron skillets.
Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast, presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Kirsten,
and I'm Julian, and today we're talking about wisdom.
Yes,
wisdom.
So first of all, wisdom tells me to tell y'all happy Valentine's Day to all the lovers out there. Although we'll be talking about wisdom from a financial point of view, there are probably some lessons that will apply to relationships as well, whether they're romantic or not. So tune in. And personally, I've been waiting on this episode because wisdom is one of those things that I have misunderstood for a long time, mostly because I associated it with age. I just assumed it was this natural progression of things. Hmm. And so when you got older, you got wiser. And because I live in somewhat of a Peter Pan fantasy, I've been waiting on me to get older to finally get my wisdom. So I've just been waiting. But there is some emerging research about wisdom and the mythology associated with it and the benefits of it that have made me change my position. So I'm excited to dig in today.
Yeah, you sound like a young girl waiting on a tooth fairy.
Or yes.
Like a dog.
Well, your wisdom teeth come in much later than all your other teeth. Like, I just felt
okay. Well played. Well played.
I just felt like it's something that I will get eventually.
You were due.
Yeah.
Your wisdom is delayed.
Yeah. Like, is it something I've done?
It's in a cargo container stuck in the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
Yeah. It'll get here eventually. I've always loved the concept or the idea or the term wisdom in my mind. I think it was very similar to you. There was always a correlation between wisdom and age. But for me, I've always attributed wisdom to artists and poets and scholars. And as I've gotten older and wiser, I've kind of widened my viewpoint on it. And I can see it in every field now, right? It's not like just certain people who do certain things. It's not like the image of wisdom that is often portrayed. Like, I see it in everyone. What's been really interesting is how I've found or identify wisdom in myself over the last couple of years. And I think a lot of it, I can say, is somewhat due to fatherhood. Our son will be 5 soon. And so I've certainly learned a lot. And obviously, as you're raising a child, you often reflect back on what you experienced. And then you go even further back and think about what your own parents may have experienced as they were doing the same for you. And so I think that natural process tends to generate wisdom within you as you're kind of reflecting on what had to happen for you to even be where you are. But even in my financial life, I think there are things that are that have happened over the last couple of years, and my own ability to respond to them with a certain degree of wisdom has been really, really interesting to see. Do you think that you do you consider yourself wise now, or like, was it delivered? Like,
I don't,
you're getting wiser with age. What happened?
I think I tend to disassociate myself from my wisdom. So like something like advice, like one would think that in order to host a podcast, you have to have some level of wisdom, but I don't see my advice as particularly wise. I see it as supportive, informative, maybe even interesting, but I'm kind of working on seeing it as wise, and maybe I'll get there by the end of the episode. But what really has given me my aha moment around how much wisdom I currently have is Dry January.
Yeah.
So for those who aren't familiar with the concept, Dry January is basically an opportunity for people to stop drinking alcohol for a month. And it's pretty common here in the States, but this is the first year I've ever participated because I'm someone who identifies as a drinker. I love an evening nightcap. I love a good glass of wine. If there's a happy hour, I'm there. So the idea of not drinking not only felt like I would be losing a piece of my identity, and y'all know we talk about identity a lot on this podcast, but it also felt like something I would have a high likelihood to fail at. And so again, if you've listened to this podcast, you know I'm a recovering perfectionist. And so I have avoided Dry January, even though I've known it existed for a really long time. But this year was different. This year, my wisdom kicked in, and I knew that the key to a successful Dry January wasn't going to be deprivation and social isolation and just kind of white-knuckling through the month through sheer willpower, because that never works for me. I always swing back to the other extreme. And I knew I needed to find support, so I joined some online communities. I needed an element of fun and serendipity, so I took advantage of a lot of sales and experimented with non-alcoholic beverages. And I needed to know that drinking wasn't this integral part of my personality or my identity, so I still made sure to hang out with friends. Like, I didn't completely avoid alcohol at all. And it's just been a great experience that I absolutely credit my wisdom to.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So our listeners know, so she's not doing it. We live together. And obviously, I think it would have been a lot harder if you were doing it and I weren't doing it. And what's interesting is I decided to do it. We spoke about it, but it's not like we'd said, all right, January 1st. Like, I think we both kind of came to our own individual decisions. I actually didn't know that you were legitimately doing it until after I was like, I'm definitely doing it. So we kind of learned together, and it's been a really interesting experience. But as you were talking about or the way that you approached Dry January this year, it made me think about my own fitness journey, because I had a very similar relationship, or I guess went through a very similar process where I knew that I wanted to do that in addition to Dry January. And I'm not saying that because I always identified as someone who is pretty fit. In fact, it's always been like a pretty strong weakness of mine. But I knew that in order for me to, well, first of all, I had to tap into my wisdom and say, well, what's worked in the past? Mm-hmm. And what didn't work was basically what I was doing, which is why I was at a point mm-hmm. where I needed to address it differently. And what I would do is go hard, you know, deprivation mm-hmm. and white knuckle, what you call it, or cold turkey.
Yeah.
And while you could say we kind of did that with Dry January, to your point, we had other things to kind of help ease into it. And with my fitness journey, instead of focusing on going to the gym, completely burning myself out 3-4 times a week, I was like, you know what, let's focus on smaller mini workouts. And what that's done is it's actually helped me to be far more consistent than I know I would have been if I had continued to do things the old way, because I would have gotten sore and then decided that I needed a day to just like take some time. Mm-hmm. And then that time leads to me falling off the wagon, and then the process mm-hmm. just kind of repeats itself. So it's been really interesting to kind of tap into my own sources of wisdom and my own experiences, and to sort of think about the role that wisdom is playing at this point in our life, which leads me to a question: is how do you define wisdom?
Ooh, I think ultimately wisdom is the knowledge that you gain from your experiences. But I recently found this more succinct term that I really like, which is an earned secret. And I like to think of wisdom as an earned secret. It's a lesson or a truth that you only learn through your unique circumstances. So we kind of touched on this in last week's episode, but so many financial breakthroughs come from those earned secrets. They become this foundation of your financial philosophy, and they kind of shield you from hype or distractions or shady characters. And so I think that that's what wisdom is for me.
I like that, because it also makes me think about something else that's kind of popped into my life over the last year, which is I've got a cohort of guys that are creators that have sort of just been drawn to me. Like, I've been kind of accepting this role as like uncle as I'm getting a little older. But I also realize that I have a valuable set of earned secrets, not just through my entrepreneurial experience, but through my time working a traditional job that is serving me very well mm-hmm. as a creator. And I've connected with these guys and their friends, but I've also sort of accepted my role as a leader in many ways. And it's been really helpful for me to see just how many secrets I have when I'm meeting with people who aren't where I am and are looking for counsel. So it's been a really kind of enlightening experience. But it also reminds me of when people ask us to define rich,
yes,
or what that means, because it's such a subjective term. But I do think that there are a lot of similarities between defining wisdom and the word rich, right? So, like, first of all, it's like it's not an absolute number.
Right.
You don't reach a point where it's like, no, I am definitely wise.
Yeah. Now. A lot of people think they do, though. Like, when when they turn 60, it's
absolute
like,
wisdom.
Wise.
It doesn't matter what I say.
Yeah, no.
It is right. True. And I was like, yeah, no.
And we'll get to that in just a minute.
Uncle Charles. That doesn't make any sense, and I need you to go sit down somewhere. But it's very similar to rich, right? Like, I mean, for some people, it could be 3 million. For some people, it could be 250,000.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's not a particular number, which I think leads me to that second point, which is that it's a relative
word. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I think we mentioned this in a previous episode, well, compared to what? Right. So the year you crack an income milestone or achieve like a huge financial goal, you're likely going to feel rich.
Oh,
and then after a while, that feeling subsides, especially if you set even higher goals for yourself. And that process just continues until you make the decision to be happy with what you have and not needing or wanting more. And I think wisdom is similar in a sense, because you may be reluctant to speak up or assume that a certain role in a relationship or a group or a community because you don't think that you have enough to offer until you meet someone who doesn't know nearly as much as you do.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, you're a guide or a teacher or an advisor or a coach informally to them. And as much as we like to say that we shouldn't compare ourselves to others, I think that there's some value in doing that, because until you do, you don't really realize how much you have to offer them.
Right.
And so there's value in comparison. And, you know, a lot of these subjects I think are overlapping, because I'm thinking about so many of the other conversations we've had around never comparing yourself to others because it gets in the way. And here we are kind of undermining ourselves, which is something that we talked about in the previous episode. And now here we are talking about wisdom, which is another one of those really abstract ideas. But I think that's, you know, quite honestly, not to land the plane or end the conversation, but this is why in the beginning of every single episode, we say that we're talking about life at the intersection of money, because there is no definitive answer. If that were the case, you'd have one episode and that would be it.
Right.
We'll just tell you everything you need to do and that'll be it. But it sort of floats just like life does.
Yes, yes. Wisdom is 100% situational. And the research actually shows that 20-year-olds and 60-year-olds experience the same levels of situational wisdom because it's happening in real time.
Good luck telling that to a 60-year-old.
Well, it's again, this is situational wisdom, not overarching wisdom. But in a situation, they're working with the same variables at the same time. Like, they exhibit the same amount of wisdom.
Yeah.
But also, it's one of those, it's just like you said, philosophers have spent decades, hundreds, centuries, really, trying to define wisdom. And everybody has their own version, from Socrates to, like, everybody has their own word for it. It's like trying to define the meaning of life.
Yep.
But luckily, that's where research comes in. So let's jump right in and start unpacking some of the findings, starting with what wisdom is not. So you alluded to this earlier. Wisdom is not age or experience.
Hmm.
Now, they're usually paired, but there are sometimes people just get old, like with no wisdom.
Right.
No added wisdom. You just old.
And if you are an employee and you are surrounded by people who've been there for 30, 40 years, no offense to those who have, but again,
some of them,
that does not necessarily mean that they are alive. They may be well versed in doing things in a way that is very ineffective.
Doing the same thing for 30 years.
Exactly.
Versus doing new things over a 30
exactly.
year period. So wisdom is not age or experience, and it's also not intelligence.
Mm.
Again, you need some intelligence to be wise, but the world is full of tons of smart people who aren't necessarily wise.
Mm-hmm.
And furthermore, studies have shown that when someone is making a wise decision, so going back to that situational wisdom, they're not just using IQ, they're also using EQ, which is emotional intelligence as well. And that's how wise people remain compassionate and open-minded and all kinds of other traits. So the research goes on to name 7 traits that determine a person's level of wisdom. And we're not going to go into all 7 of them because that would just take the whole episode. But a few notable ones that are particularly needed, I think, for managing your money are Emotional regulation, so your ability to manage negative emotions like a market drop or a loss of income. Your ability to manage negative emotions and stress that get in the way of decision making is one indicator of how wise you are. Another one is the acceptance of diverse perspectives. So not just learning that there are value systems outside of your own, but also accepting them and recognizing that, like, that's a valid value system, even though it's different from mine.
Yeah.
And then another one is spirituality, which in this case isn't just like a synonym for religion, but rather it's this idea of connecting with yourself or nature or some transcendent entity like a soul or a higher power, like a god, just a higher, you know, order of self.
Yeah.
And when I first read these traits, I thought to myself, like, wow, like, I really need to stop judging my actions as either good or bad. I should start filing them as wise or unwise based on how many of these traits I deploy when I was making the decision. Because something can be a smart decision, but not necessarily a wise one. Like, that's what this research made me realize. And it just feels like wise is a far more durable description than good.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of a food metaphor. Like, it's like wisdom is the cast iron skillet of soft skills. Come on now. Come on now. Durable, withstanding, gets better with age.
You know what? I'm not going to reject it. I'm not going to reject it. But, you know, see, now you got me thinking about cast iron skillets. Because they do require... They require wisdom to use, first of all, and maintenance.
Okay, you don't have to break apart my metaphor.
So, you know, it's stay in your lane. It would be wise. It would be wise. No, I love that. And I may go back and listen to this podcast myself because I really love what you just said. You made a point about something being smart and it not necessarily being wise. And there are two life examples that immediately come to mind. The first one, and I'm not saying this to just be sweet, even though it is a bit of this would be released right around Valentine's Day.
I know. But I'm nervous now. What you about to say?
Well, no, I would say the first thing that I think about is marriage and proposing. Mm-hmm. To you, because I remember there are clearly financial implications there. And I remember making the decision to delay paying off my student loans and instead to get an engagement ring. Mm. And again, we can't go back in time any easier than we can project what's going to happen in the future. But I can say that today, that was certainly a wise decision, even though at the time it could very easily say, well, no, this is financially speaking, like this is not,
right.
You know, in the short term, it's not a smart decision. You should obviously go ahead and pay off your student loans. But it's like, well, then when do you start?
Right.
Start or stop. Doesn't matter. Right. So I would say that's certainly a wise decision on my part. So kudos to me. The second one, though, I would say on the other end of the experiential and emotional spectrum is quitting my job. You and I have very different, even though we worked for the same company. And this isn't to trash them, but I had a very, very different experience towards my latter days. It was a very toxic and stressful environment that I was a part of. And deciding to quit that job and, but just being honest, like leaving over $100,000 of salary on the table. Like that is money, obviously, that we could have used to advance several personal and business objectives. But I left that for the benefit of my own health, the wellness of my family, raising my child, and all of those other things. But even when I just think about where our business is today, I don't know that we would be where we are had I not found the courage. I've always defined it as courage. But looking back, it was because I'd attained enough wisdom to even know that, hey, this isn't it, right? This is not, and I say it all the time, your title is not going to be in your tombstone, right? So this, you know, it's not worth it. Yes. So put this down, step away from this thing, invest in yourself and see what happens, right? That was wisdom speaking to me, whether it was coming from outside, or inside, both, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just think about those two examples because, again, it's a very clear situation. And I'm sharing that for a lot of the listeners out there who may be wrestling with, quite honestly, we're talking about long-term beliefs or objectives and like short-term sort of costs.
Right.
Like sometimes you have to be willing to accept certain things for the belief that something greater or bigger will happen in the future.
Yes. Okay. So before we get to how you can build wisdom, there's one last thing that I found that was really interesting in the data. What do you think is the biggest barrier to wisdom?
The biggest barrier, courage. Hmm. People not having the, or fear, I would say. Like the fear, okay.
The biggest hurdle, I know it's harsh. The biggest hurdle to gaining more wisdom is intellectual humility. Yes, science is coming through with the read and saying basically the thing that's stopping us from becoming wise is the fact that we are hard-headed. Mm. We don't want to admit that we're wrong about something.
Okay.
Or that our own perspective may have been shaped using incomplete or flawed information. Now, they do clean it up a little bit and they say part of the reason that we're this way is because we're hardwired to be this way. Why are you rolling your eyes?
Because you always like try to make this a biological conversation about
evolutionary
cavemen and when we were being chased by saber-toothed tigers and we didn't want to admit.
Not folks being tired of my caveman references. They're here to stay, people, okay? I'm a student. But this one actually isn't evolutionary. It's more like a cognitive blind spot. And the name for it is confirmation bias. Like basically people love to consume information that supports their views and reinforces what they already believe. And social media obviously just compounds this with 24/7 refreshed content that's algorithmically chosen.
Yeah.
But confirmation bias isn't a solo act. That's not the only reason why you're hard-headed, according to science, not me.
I was about to say, you might want to adjust that.
Science is the one who said y'all are hard-headed, not me, okay? But when your confirmation bias gets blended with another psychological phenomena called cognitive dissonance, you actually get the equivalent of this Long Island iced tea levels of stubbornness, just real strong levels of stubbornness. And it just makes you dig your heels in the sand and refuse to accept new knowledge or change anything.
So I do, I agree with that. It's actually making me think of Masterclass. I think I was telling you about this. I happen to watch Neil deGrasse Tyson's Masterclass. For those who don't know Neil deGrasse Tyson, he is a world-renowned astrophysicist. Masterclass is actually a brand, but it's like a learning platform where they interview or record these interviews that are broken up into modules and all of them together to just call them masterclasses. You can learn just about anything, cooking, you know, in this case, Neil deGrasse Tyson's class, I think it was about like the scientific method and critical thinking. But anyway, what was really interesting was that he was talking about the scientific method and how it's designed to like maintain a relentless search for the truth, the absolute truth, which means that you have to be willing to test and reexamine what you believe to be true. So it doesn't matter who said it. Like
right.
You can be Einstein or Newton. Like there was like, if Newton was right, then we should see these things as we are, you know, searching for a new planet or something like that. And so that's the benefit, I think, of the scientific method and thinking like a scientist. But all that to say, like to your point around confirmation bias, because I think he had an entire section about that and cognitive bias and the role that it plays in getting in the way of people finding the truth. Because to your point, or I guess to the researcher's point, you're right. That's oftentimes what gets in the way. It's like for this to be right, I would have to admit that what I've been doing, what I've been told, what I've perpetuated, what I've supported, who I am, where I live, where I work, my chosen career path, all of those things would have to be wrong. And that can't be true.
Right.
No.
Yeah. It feels like a sunk cost.
It does. Yeah. It does. And that gets in the way. And again, I am confident if we searched, if there were a way for us to search, I've always apologized to teachers, but because I'm not picking on those of us who are in education. But I find this more and more common with teachers. There is such a deep emotional and in many cases historical and familial legacy with that profession. But quite honestly, they are also in the forefront of people that reach out and send us notes and say, hey, I'm struggling. I want to leave, but I don't know if these skills are transferable. And, you know, there's so much of their identity and their belief of how the world works and their purpose is sort of rooted in that. And they struggle because, unfortunately, it's not, in many cases, a very well-paying profession. For some, it is. But anyway, that's really what it makes me think of. I think even if we're not looking at this from a professional lens, and I'm thinking about like some underlying beliefs, and I hate to channel certain people here, but it makes me think about things like home ownership, right? Like, and we open so many talks by talking about home ownership because it's one of those beliefs that so many people are just steadfast in, right? Like home ownership is the foundation of wealth building. I'm like, okay, well,
their wisdom might lead them there, right?
For some people.
Their experience might say, this was the best decision that I've ever made, but it's not a universal truth.
It absolutely is.
And that's what wisdom allows you to see is that there are not many. I was going to say there are none, but there are not many universal truths. Correct. You have to be able to look inside yourself, look at your unique experiences, your unique cocktail of confirmation bias and cognitive dissonance, and determine whether or not this can be true for you.
Yep.
All right. So we'll be right back with ways you can gain wisdom when we come back from the break. Okay. So we've covered what wisdom is, what it's not, and what stops us from getting wise, which is our own hard-headedness. But the good news, the silver lining to all of this, is that wisdom can actually be learned. So I want to talk about a couple of ways that we can cultivate wisdom on our own.
Okay.
And the first is to narrow the scope. Make a small list of areas in your life, or even more specifically, more targeted in your finances, where you want to deploy more wisdom. So in your life, this might be interpersonal relationships, fitness, drinking, and then in your budget, it might be categories like your alcohol consumption, the amount of time you eat out, the interest paid towards your debt, whatever it is. Pick two or three things to start with. And this is such an important step because you don't want to walk away from this podcast with like this vague, broad goal, like, I just want to be more wise in general. Because wisdom is very similar to happiness. It's not a trait that you can just be 24/7. Life happens. There are situations that arise. And you want to aim for situational wisdom so that it becomes like a muscle that you build. And then you can rely on it the same way that you can reasonably rely on your quads whenever you need to climb a flight of stairs, right? You can reasonably believe that even if you don't do squats every single day, that if you see a flight of stairs, that you can make it up them, you know, assuming that you're able-bodied and you know, are able to climb the stairs. But that's the way you want to think about wisdom. Pick a couple of situations where you can start to practice situational everyday wisdom so that you can build areas in your life that it's a reliable, you know, skill.
Situational wisdom. I love that. All right. So another tip to gaining more wisdom is to practice self-reflection. And here are a few benefits. The first is taking time to pause breaks up the routine habits and the mindless activities that we do. So things like taking a walk or meditation or quiet time, even if we're just talking about unplugging ourselves from social media or putting down our phones, all of these things are good habits. Obviously, journaling is another one, which, by the way, doesn't have to be written. Right. So for those of you who are thinking like, I'm a dude, I don't need a diary. It doesn't have to be a journal, like a literal pretty journal with flowers on it. It could be a video journal. It can be an audio journal, but just some form or act of recording your thoughts and your feelings, I think is really, really critical for assessing and measuring growth over time. And I think that is really, really helpful to help you tap into where you've been, how far you've come, and where you may be going. Another benefit of self-reflection is that it also facilitates deeper learning because it strengthens your intuition about what works and what doesn't. I shared my own experience earlier in the podcast about exercise. And one of the things that I learned was that like fast results like might be something that I was able to do then. Obviously, I'm a little older, but I'm sorry, I was a little younger back then, but I also knew, based on where I am today, that like generating fast results also led for me to be burnt out. And then I would find myself sort of slowly back on to the path of negative habits again. And so the act of just like self-reflecting and looking back and even, quite honestly, keeping a journal about what your workouts were, and I have that in my 30s and mid-30s and so on, was helpful for me to say, okay, at this stage in my life, knowing this about myself, this is what I need to do in order to achieve my goals. And so far, again, not to hype beast myself, but so far, I'm very pleased with the results because I've taken a completely different path. It's not so stressful. It's not so disruptive. It's a lot more accommodating to where I am in my life at this point.
Yeah, I'm a huge believer in self-reflection, mainly because it gives you something to compare your present to. Journaling is my drug of choice for my own personal topics. But in our business, like you mentioned, it doesn't always have to be so, you know, long form or like written paragraphs. In our business, I make it a point to add weekly wins and opportunities at the top of every agenda. We meet once a week. And so it's just a bullet list of like things that we did really well, things that didn't go so well. And at any point, I can compare the things that we were celebrating last year at this same time versus the things that we're celebrating now. And the same with the challenges. I can look back and kind of laugh at what felt like end of the world problems six months ago and reassure myself that emotionally speaking, we've been here before when I'm experiencing a problem today. We'll get through it, right? It's not the same problem like for like, but it felt the same way and the tools are the same to come out of it. And I think financially speaking, writing things down or doing a video or whatever your method of choice is, writing things down helps you take greater control of the money story that you're telling yourself. So when I was paying off debt, I wrote these future letters to myself at the time, and I would date it based off of a milestone that I was planning to accomplish. So if I knew I was going to pay off a card on November 15th, I would write a letter, and that letter would say, "Open me on November 15th. I just think that whenever you can, you should try to put your own narrative spin on whatever happened. It just helps you feel like things aren't just happening to you. You're a part of them, and it feels sort of restorative in a sense.
I love that. It makes me think of the importance of budgeting and tracking it too, right? And I think we've mentioned this before, but having a place where you can leave comments or qualitative, almost like journal entries into your budgets so that you can see what it felt like. Because even as I'm speaking this, I remember looking back year over year and jotting down like, all right, so if I, you know, accomplish this thing by June, then I'm going to treat myself. And it would seem, you know, stretch goals would be like a little vacation or being able to get like an oceanfront room or something like that. Like all of those little things. And it would feel like such huge accomplishments. And even now looking back, it's like, yeah, I mean, you know, that's just the norm, right? But that's the process of growth, and that's what wisdom affords you.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, okay, well, it's relative. It's the same.
It's actually one of my favorite gifts to give people who are experiencing a milestone, whether it's buying a new house or getting married or having a baby or whatever the milestone is for them. They make these five-year journals that like every page is basically five columns. So it's not meant for like long, lengthy paragraphs. But every day, if you build a habit of just going in and writing a couple of things from your day, what was sad, what was happy, you know, after 5 years, you've got a five-year snapshot on a single page, right? You know, January 15th this last year and the year before that and the year before that, kind of how you were feeling and what you were struggling with.
Yeah.
And so it's a great little time capsule to have on hand.
I love it. Don't give me that gift, though.
No, I would never give you
that. Yeah, I appreciate it. You can get it to somebody else. The last thing you can do to gain wisdom, all right, guys, the last thing is to make mistakes. And I think this is a really important one because most of the times when you make a mistake, it activates a part of your brain that's like filled with shame and pain and sadness and fear and all these negative things. But we have to remind ourselves that not all mistakes do that, right? Yes. The term mistake, you know, it has a certain connotation to it, but not every mistake leads to a negative outcome. Some mistakes actually activate the part of the brain that causes pleasure.
Yes.
And you want to put yourself in a position where you can make some happy mistakes as well, which means you've got to put yourself in a position where you can like assess them for what they are, and in some cases even redefine what a mistake is in your mind or in your heart. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'm thinking about food here, and this is probably going to gross a couple of people out, but it is what it is. But like Caesar salads is a really happy mistake. A lot of people don't realize how that came to be. It was because like someone basically didn't have anything left in the kitchen. They threw it all in a bowl, and they became wildly popular for it. And it was like, oh, what? You like this?
Caesar salads are amazing.
Anchovies and eggs. I was like, why would you put anchovies in there?
That's a good question. Why would you put anchovies in a salad?
That's not like it's a foundational ingredient in five other salad dressings out there. It's just unique to the origins of Caesar salad. Mm-hmm. So all of that to say, there are happy accidents out there. I also think about eggs. Think about all the other things that may have come out of the...
A chicken that we didn't eat.
Yeah. Think about all the things that we tried that weren't as useful as eggs.
Right.
It's a very happy accident. Eggs are pretty universal. We eat them for breakfast. They're in breads, dressings.
Okay, let's talk about other happy eggs. Let's just move away from chickens. And
you like to talk about the cavemen. They had some tough times to get us to this point. That's wisdom.
Velcro was a happy accident.
Really?
Beer. Yep.
No, didn't know that.
All these things.
Oh, beer, I knew that.
One of my homegirl's kids was a happy accident.
Okay. Let's hope she's not listening.
No, but I like your point. I think that when mistakes are combined with a new learning, you actually experience it as a reward. In your mind, you don't tell yourself that that's automatically a mistake because it didn't happen the way that you thought it was going to happen.
Yeah.
You actually gain wisdom about what it means the next time that things go wrong. You're like, you kind of leave it open where it's like, yeah, it's not what I imagined, but, you know, it could turn out perfectly fine. You never know.
Yeah. Shout out to the people that have divorce parties, too.
I get to throw a couple.
Happy accidents.
Full circle moment. I do feel wiser having recorded this episode.
Well, good. I'm glad I could do that for you. All right. Why don't we record our final thoughts?
Okay. So my final thought is there's a lot of financial content out there that just kind of emphasizes willpower as the primary mental energy that you need in order to change your financial trajectory.
Yeah.
But I'd argue that it's actually wisdom. Wisdom is the thing that closes the gap between your short-term interests and your long-term interests, and it allows you to still have willpower without relying on it all the time. And as the Serenity Prayer suggests, wisdom is what leads you to know the difference between the things that you can't change and the things that you can. And that's actually how you make progress. Hmm. So stop being hard-headed and get you some wisdom.
You say it like it's on sale.
I know. Go get you some wisdom.
Wisdom on your way home. I love it. My final thoughts are that, you know, I think wisdom is within everyone. I believe it's in everyone, but it needs to be unlocked. And I think there are two things that you can do to access it. The first is forgiving yourself for past mistakes. I think that enables you to reframe some of the mistakes that you've made in the past and to see the good within them so that you can draw on them and use it for present and or future decisions. Once you've done that, I think you need to grant yourself a pass to make future mistakes in the future. And sorry.
Leave more mistakes in the future so we can look back.
Right. But, you know, you hear this language a lot in entrepreneurial circles and amongst like business leadership circles, but it's like granting yourself the freedom to fail, I think, is something that is really advantageous to generating wisdom. Because honestly, if you don't take any chances, you're not going to make any mistakes. And if you're not making any mistakes, then you're not going to be teaching yourself any lessons that you can use to improve upon going forward. So don't be afraid to make some mistakes. They are going to happen, but your goal is to make more happy mistakes than, let's say, unhappy or destructive
painful mistakes. Yes. All right. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. It would be a painful mistake if you liked what you heard and didn't go leave us a 5-star rating and review. It will be one of the wisest decisions you can make today. Go get you some wisdom from the ratings and review page, and we'll see y'all next week.